Hello, listeners. Real quick, sorry for the bad quality. I'm recording this last minute on my voice memos app, like a true professional. But I wanted to let you know that Tayshia and I decided to try something new for this episode, something we haven't done yet in the year that we've been doing Audanthropology. We decided to use AI to do our research, our script writing, and we were even able to use it to do our editing for us. It makes our job so much easier, and AI definitely doesn't harm the environment and suck the soul out of everything that it's used for. And I really hope you enjoy this episode. April Fools, April Fools, April Fools. Okay, Tayshia and I would absolutely never ever use AI. We avoid it like the plague. I couldn't help it. Most podcasts for April Fool's Day, I feel like everyone kind of says the same thing. They hop on and they go, hey, you guys, we're actually quitting. This is going to be the last episode. So I had to come up with something a little bit fresh. I'm also recording this on April 1st because I'm editing this on April 1st because I'm a procrastinator. And anyways, let's get to the episode.
On the island of Orkney in Scotland, there is a village that gives us a glimpse into life in the past. Imagine our surprise when the incredibly well-preserved village is actually 5,000 years old. Hello and welcome everyone to Audanthropology.
So we're going ancient with this.
Yes, we're going back quite a bit. So to get things started, I am Tayshia, and I am here with...
Ivy!
Yay! How are you doing, Ivy?
I'm very good. I'm very excited. I don't know too much about the archaeology at Orkney. I see it talked about and mentioned. I feel like... I don't know if Time Team might have been there, and maybe that's why it's ringing a bell...
Oh, maybe.
But I'm very eager for everything you have to cover. And we have a listener who sent us a very, very nice long email to thank. Andrew. Andrew was his
yes.
name? Yes, Andrew.
Yes, Andrew. Yes. Thank you, Andrew, for your wonderful email. It was very nice to get some feedback. And some things that we can, you know, improve on, but also just different ways we can go.
Yeah, Andrew definitely sounds very smart. I was reading through his email, and I'm like, maybe you should be hosting this podcast because you really sound like you know what you're talking about with anthropology. But yeah, thank you so much for your kind words. Anyone that does email us, if we do forget to shout it out on the podcast, we are still reading it. It's just we tend to, you know, it's not going to be a month or so until we're recording and then we forget because we're old. But yes, let us know what other things you want us to talk about or improvements. One of Andrew's suggestions was kind of getting back to longer, more in-depth episodes, which we definitely mm-hmm. really, really want to do.
Yes.
Tayshia, I think, said that this episode's not going to be the longest because hashtag... busy. I'm really sorry for saying hashtag. I have teenage nephews and they get really embarrassed when I talk like that, and so I have to. But I really try not to for the podcast. Professional. we're professional. Anyways.
We are professionals here.
Anyways, we are babbling. Tayshia, how are you?
I'm all right. I guess in kind of how I am doing, I wanted to offer my apologies for the lateness on this episode. You know, it's just, there's been so much going on in the world, and it's mm-hmm. been hard to find the energy or really like even just the enjoyment to do the research, to want to do anything sometimes.
Oh, yep.
And I'm sure that Ivy's experienced it. I'm sure you all have experienced it in the last a while now. But,
oh my God, isn't that such a good way to put it? The last a while now.
But we appreciate you all being here and listening and engaging and creating this community of people interested in anthropology, and we want to continue to build that. So we appreciate you being here.
Yeah, and we'll make sure to have some much longer in-depth episodes coming up. I decided I am not going to take summer classes this year. I usually try to take at least a couple summer classes just to kind of knock some credits out of the way. But I was like, you know what? Like, a little break could be nice. So this summer especially, you can expect some nice heavy hitters.
Well, and we've also talked about maybe picking like a theme and having both of us pick a topic to kind of dive into so that, you know, yeah. You're getting kind of twice the amount in an episode. But yeah, so we've got ideas.
Mm-hmm. There's things brewing behind the scenes. And of course, we always do post extra stuff on Substack. So at first, our newsletter was Magic Mondays, then Teaching Tuesdays. Now I have altered it to Weird Wednesdays. We're slowly working through the week. Not that you're getting something on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's just Wednesdays, but now we are into Weird Wednesdays. The last post I did for it was about scapula shovels. If yes. You want to learn about scapula bone shovels, go check it out. And I think that's enough rambling, maybe. Taisha has a fun and exciting story. Taisha has been released from King Tut's tomb. As we know in the last episode, Taisha was on site, like journalism boots on the ground.
Yes.
But she's been released.
Microphone had to go with the cheapy old one.
No. It was the bad connection from being in the tomb.
Oh, yes.
And
yes,
the curse. But the curse has, the very real curse of King Tut has been lifted.
And we made our sacrifices.
We made our sacrifices, of course, because we are also witches. And so that means that's what we do, according to people.
All right. Well, to no one's surprise, as I mentioned in the hook, we're heading back to Scotland.
Yay!
And I say, look, we will stop covering Scotland when Scotland stops being so anthropologically interesting. Mm-hmm, all mm-hmm. right?
Which it will be never.
Right? Exactly. So I discovered this site while I was researching a book that I may or may not be writing, mostly not mm-hmm. writing at this point, but it takes place in Stromness, Orkney, and I found this site kind of like I had been doing like Google Maps and looking at the maps and exploring different parts of the island. And I found this site and I was like, this is really cool. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to share with you all. So,
I'm at the edge of my seat. There's ants in my pants.
Scotland is covered in incredible archaeological finds, standing stones, cairns, burial chambers, and even a few villages. Ivy had told us about the site at Claude Helen in our first episode, which featured roundhouses that were, it was like 5,000 years old from the Bronze Age.
Something like that.
I think that's what when I double checked.
Old.
But there is a site that is even older that gives us a pretty clear picture of what life was like in Neolithic Scotland. Skara Brae is a site in Orkney, a small group of islands off of the coast of northern Scotland. The site is located on the west coast of the main island of Orkney and is the site of Skara Brae is older than Stonehenge and the Great Pyramids.
Whoa, okay. That's a fun little like time scale way to put it, because that really
hammers in. Like everything that I looked at, all my research, that was like the top like little fun fact.
Older than Stonehenge, older than the pyramids.
And it was occupied from about 3180 BC to about 205,000 BC.
Quick correction. I think Taisha meant to say 2,500.
And Skara Brae is a village of 10 houses. It was discovered in 1850 when a large storm hit Orkney and the wind and sea removed the earth from a large mound that was known at the time as Skara Brae. And the remains of the houses were rediscovered then by William Watt, who was the Laird of Scale, which is the area where Scarabray is located. And William was an an archaeology hobbyist, so he began to excavate the site. He was able to uncover four houses and discovered many artifacts within the homes. But for unknown reasons, work on the excavation was abandoned in 1868, and the site was again battered by a storm in either 1924 or 1925. I kept seeing both years, and I'm like, it's a year difference, but...
Yeah, I guess for the 1800s, a year difference isn't that bad, you know? We're figuring out record keeping still.
Right. But one of the houses was lost to the sea. So it was determined that the site needed to be excavated again, and so that we can learn everything we could from the site.
And that's such a real problem. Even right now, erosion on coastlines is happening so rapidly. You know, the clock's a ticking for some of these sites.
Well, I think I point this out later in my notes, but Scarabray actually was much farther from the coastline at first, but since over time, there's been a lot of erosion, and so now, like, it's right on the coast. Mm-hmm. So, in 1928, Gordon Child, who was the first professor of archaeology at the University of Edinburgh, was brought in to lead the excavation. Initially, he believed the buildings to be from about the Iron Age, so about the same age as Claude Helene, about 3,000 years old, but it was later determined to be around 5,000 years old, putting it in the Neolithic period. In order to help protect the village from further destruction by storms and erosion, Child had a seawall built on the shoreline, just to, like I said, help protect it.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the houses were built of flat stone slabs and set into large mounds of midden. Do you know what midden is yet, Ivy?
So I should, because I watch Time Team and they excavate midden all the time, but is that either where they dump their trash or is that where they like build up to keep the walls up? It's one of them.
I mean, basically both. Yeah, it's like it's prehistoric garbage piles and like a lot of the times they get built into for protection, stability, and insulation, especially during the cold winters of Orkney. So yes, you were right on both counts.
See, and that's something that I don't think we've even covered in like any of my classes yet. I just know because they run into bins all the time on Time Team. So thank you, Phil Harding, McAston, Tony Robinson, all those peeps.
So they were also linked by covered passageways. There was a lot of roofs and, I don't know, there's a lot of really cool videos on YouTube where you can kind of go through it and see what we're talking about. But each house has a single room with a floor space of about 40 square meters.
luxury. Good luck getting that in like New York or something. You can't even get that. Right? So LA could never get that square footage in an apartment.
Oh goodness. And what was incredible was each house was furnished still with a dresser, which were thought to display the family's prized possessions, two box beds, and a central square hearth with stone blocks for seats.
Okay.
And they also discovered a series of drains that ran underneath the village, and each house contained a small cell that connected together to create a very large drain. So these basically have been identified as indoor toilets.
Hey, good for them.
Indoor plumbing.
Yeah. See,
5,000 years ago.
I could live in one of these. Like, send me back to the Neolithic. Well, there's a lot of things I wouldn't like about it, but, you know.
We'll talk about a bit more. You know, maybe you'll decide by the end that this is for you.
Yep. We'll see. Well, do we want to live in this like we lived in the cave of Homo
Floresiensis?
Floresiensis. Yeah.
So there was one house that did not have the dressers or the beds in them, but instead was divided out into smaller spaces and contained fragments of stone, bone, and antler, suggesting that this house was possibly used as a workshop. There were many shards of pottery that were found. The shards of pottery were covered in grooved patterns that are very distinctive to northern Scotland. There were other items uncovered in the houses that included tools, jewelry, beads. There was some gaming dice and other carved stone objects. And many of these items can be seen in museums in Stromness, Kirkwall, and the Scatobray Visitor Center. And Stromness and Kirkwall are both cities on the Orkney Islands. Stromness is closest to where Scatobray is.
Don't you just wish that you lived there?
Yes.
So bad.
So very
but
bad.
But I think it might be a little bit expensive to move overseas, so I don't know that that's going to happen.
Probably not, but we can keep dreaming.
We need about a million more subs on Substack for that to happen, so go all subscribe right, to our
come
Substack
on, guys.
So we can move yes. to Scotland.
The intricate works on the pottery and beads led for the people of Scatobray to be called the Grooved Ware people by researchers.
Grooved? They got yes. the groove? Okay. Another reason I think I could live here, groovy times.
Right? And there was also this really cute little figure that was named Scatobray Buddo, which I just learned that Buddo is an Orcadian word that is a gender-neutral term of endearment.
How do you spell Scatobray?
Scatobray.
And then this is the Buddo?
Yes. Buddo.
Buddo. I was like, I need to see a picture of this right. Oh my gosh.
Yes, he's adorable.
He's so cute.
Well, they're gender-neutral, so...
They are
adorable.
Cute. Oh my gosh.
And so they're carved from whalebone, and it has four holes, which looks like eyes, a mouth, and a navel.
A little belly button.
Yes. And they were initially sketched out in one of the early excavations, but then it was lost, and it actually was rediscovered in the Stromness Museum, I think in 2016 is what I found.
Thank goodness. And, you said lost, and I got scared it was going to be another Lilius 80.
Yeah, Lilius 80.
In her missing skull. I was like, no, please, no.
I know. I was worried about that too, but nope. Now they are on display, so you can go and see them, and I definitely hope that we're able to do that. The villagers of Scatobray were farmers, hunters, pastoralists, and fishermen. The houses, pottery, and beads suggest that the people living at Scatobray were skilled craftsmen, able to create beautiful and masterful pieces with simple tools. There was a lot of evidence of farming. I think it was like wheat and barley. And then I think sheep was the big thing that they were finding.
Makes sense.
So over time, they grew the village with their people for over 600 years, and they would rebuild newer buildings out of the older buildings. And so they would reuse older parts that weren't working anymore and build newer spaces. And it was thought that anywhere from 50 to 100 people probably lived at the village throughout the time that it was occupied.
Okay, that's a decent size, I feel like, for a little Neolithic settlement.
Yeah. And there were other materials that were only found on other parts or like other islands in the Orkney archipelago. It shows that the villagers were trading and in contact with other Neolithic peoples in the area.
Fun!
And there are other Neolithic settlements that are similar in style to Scatobray, just not as well preserved. Scatobray is kind of just the best example that we have. There are also some standing stones and burial mounds found kind of more inland from like where Scatobray is and centralized between the other settlements. So, and all of this dates from about the same time. And so it's suggested that these all, like the standing stones, may have been a collaboration between all the peoples living in the island at the time.
Aww.
So yeah, just kind of like a really As it's been noted that weapons were not found in Scottabray, suggesting a peaceful communal lifestyle.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a real essence of community in the way you kind of describe that, and the trading and these, like, what they think are communal spaces. And I wonder if they did share, like, burial grounds or anything. I don't know.
Yeah, and I would think that, yeah, like, with those standing stones, that they were celebrating the solstices, or, you know, the other marks of the season together in those spaces.
Aww. See, and then I would love to take part in that. I love me some standing stones, some monoliths. Yes, yes, please. And also, I would love to be buried in a cairn. So this is all very appealing to me.
Yep, everything's adding up.
Everything's adding up to, I don't know.
Move to Scottabray.
to move, yes, yes, yes. To everybody subscribing to our Substack and giving us a bunch of money, and then we can move to Scotland.
So we get a pretty good look into what life may have been like on this island 5,000 years ago, based on the discoveries in this village. One mystery remains, however. Why was the village abandoned 600 years after it was built?
Can I give a guess?
Sure.
I feel like usually when this happens, it's because of either climate changes and it's just not as ideal anymore, or sometimes like shifts in like government and land owning, like, you know, maybe the farming styles have changed, and I don't know. What is it? Do tell. Do tell.
Scottabray has been called Scotland's Pompeii, leading to the assumption that a natural disaster occurred and caused the villagers to abandon their houses, fleeing for safer grounds.
Okay.
Being near the coast, and like I had mentioned earlier, Scottabray was farther away from the coast than it is now. But it seems safe to assume that a great storm, not unlike the one that revealed it, caused the village to be abandoned quickly. And Gordon Child, the archaeologist who was doing the, like, not the first excavation, but the, like, first
more legitimate one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, I'm not sure what the right word I'm looking for is, but
I mean, archaeology as a practice had some iffy starts, but some people were genuinely trying to find and, you know, understand and preserve.
Yes.
Can't fault them too much for not being just like we are today.
Well, and we still don't really have everything right today either.
No.
So Gordon Child even wrote of about this theory in his book, which is called Scottabray, a Pictish village in Orkney.
Oh.
And so I have a quote, or the quote from the book is, what was this catastrophe? Its effect was to leave the huts exposed to the infiltration of sand, but otherwise the features of the interior were undisturbed. There is no trace of hostile violence. The huts had not been pillaged, nor the valuables hidden in them carried off. It is, therefore, more reasonable to think of a natural agency, namely a hurricane from the northwest, perhaps coinciding with a high tide. At the same time, the sand dunes might be set in motion, and people so poorly equipped as our villagers could only find refuge from this foe on the higher ground. And that, end quote.
Okay. What's strange to me is that, and this happened with Pompeii and like others that were affected with the Mount Vesuvius eruption. But usually people go back and do a little bit of looting and salvaging. So, I mean, I suppose that could have happened to an extent, but.
Well, then that's a good thought, Ivy.
Oh, is it? Oh, wait, are you going to talk about this?
I mean, I can't remember if I did specifically put it in my notes, but if I remember, I'll mention it. But, but based on some of the artifacts found in one of the homes, stories of a woman fleeing and her necklace getting caught and breaking were imagined to help push the idea of this panic that permeated the village during this so-called disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gordon Child even mentions this story of the woman in his book. But I don't think that this is an official theory, but this is kind of my personal fun theory, that, I mean, Scotland is home to many mythical beasts, and I think it's incredibly possible that the village was abandoned for more supernatural reasons.
I mean, they were incredibly superstitious, and it's hard for people today to think that, like, oh, they actually believed in these things. But of course they did. Like, that was their understanding. Okay. Right. So wait.
Yes.
Loch Ness Monster ate them all. Okay. Boom. Or done. Wait. Don't let ancient aliens. Oh, gosh. They've probably already gotten a hold of this. Aliens beamed them all up or something.
Probably. Well, there are stories, or there are Orcadian stories of the Storworm, which is a giant sea serpent that I think could have easily caused Scatterbray to be abandoned.
Okay. Okay.
But that probably is just me running away with my imagination.
But I mean, you know, you think, you know, a lot of the times they use these things to explain something like this storm.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, this horrible storm hits, like, oh my gosh, we're having to evacuate. And you're not going to want to go back after thinking that some sort of, you know, being from your mythologies has just come and attacked you. That would deter people. So,
right.
But
most likely, and most agreed upon now, is that the abandonment actually happened gradually over time. There's not really anything that specifically points to everybody just up and vanished. Across Orkney, evidence of a societal shift as we entered into the Bronze Age suggests a slow move from village life into more individualizations like farmsteads.
That's what I was trying to verbalize earlier. I was like, oh,
I think, yeah, I think you did it.
Things. Okay, good. I still get a little gold star for that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
See, this archaeology student's learning. She knows a little bit of stuff.
So over time, Scatterbray was filled with windblown sand and slowly covered and preserved for us to discover again later. And that's kind of like you had said, where there was still a lot of artifacts and things. So it wasn't like it was pillaged or, you know, like you said, the storm ended and then people came back to collect their things, kind of a thing. So just the evidence definitely points more towards it was a slow abandonment.
So to get this straight, so Nessie did not swim through the theorized underground channel from Loch Ness connecting it to the ocean, and then Nessie went there and ate everybody. That's what you're saying?
Oh no, I mean, that could definitely have also happened. I'm not discounting that. No.
Thank you. There, I'll like submit that for like a master's thesis or something. No. joking. Sort of.
But so if you get the chance to visit Scatterbray, there is an incredible visitor center and a museum on the site as well that has a lot of really great information. And like I said earlier, there's videos that you can check out the site on YouTube. But as we've also already said, hopefully Ivy and I will get to experience this incredible site firsthand, thanks to your lovely subscribes to Substack.
Yeah, hold on. We just need to get really famous and get really rich, and then we can move there. And that's all we have to do. That should be really easy.
So easy. We should be there within a year.
At most. I do have one thing I would like to bring up. I was trying to keep notes as you were covering this, and there's one thing that came to mind, if you're ready for that segment of chit-chat.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to touch down on something I've been trying to learn more about myself and just understanding, like, archaeological, like, reasoning. And I know, and this is mostly, you probably know all this, Tayshia, but for people listening, when it comes to items as old as the Neolithic, it can be really hard for us to be like, oh, like, what is this tool? What is this object? What was its purpose? And so I just wanted to mention that to do that, it is just a lot of guesswork. But as we like to say on the podcast, it's educated guesswork. And usually that's done through things like experimental archaeology. So, you know, we find something like, look at this nice piece of flint that's kind of this more rectangular shape and it's really sharp on one side. Like, I wonder what this was used for. And people, it's exactly what it sounds like. They experiment. They're like, is this used for maybe cutting meat, doing this? That's how a lot of them get labeled as, you know, well, these are arrowheads for this kind of hunting. These are scrapers for separating meat from skin. Some of this is also done through, and this is just like throughout like all time of archaeology, we do a lot of cross-cultural generalizations. So if we have kind of somewhat concretely determined what a Neolithic tool or object was used for in one area, we can kind of look if something really similar or identical even is found somewhere else and be like, oh, hey, well, it's probably this. And maybe this was traded or something, or who knows. And this is all kind of part of archaeological reasoning, just trying to figure out what something from so freaking long ago was for. And can we be 100% certain all the time? Nope. But like humans really haven't, like we've changed, but also not that much. And when it comes to something like a tool, you can look at something that's like really blunt on one end and be like, we probably hit things with this like a hammer, you know? You find something really big and axe-shaped, well, it's probably an axe, you know? So,
right. Well, and even just kind of like with how we were talking about the different theories of like how Scarabray was abandoned, a lot of the times kind of the most simple answer is the most correct.
Yeah.
And I feel like that goes into the same thing with, you know, trying to figure out what these things may have been used for. You could probably think of 100 different like fantastical things, and that could be true, but also a lot of the times, yeah, the most simple answer is usually the most true.
And then if you can't come up with something that simple, you call it ritual and dust your hands off. But also sometimes it isn't even that wrong, because again, like they were incredibly like spiritually inclined in their day-to-day life and existence. So, you know,
right. It's
not always. I know people make fun of it in archaeology all the time, like, oh, we don't know, let's say it's ritual. But a lot of the times it was. So,
right. It's not too far off. So there was, yeah, definitely a lot more magic in the mundane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you all for joining us on another journey to Scotland, and I'm sure it won't be our last. You can find our past episodes wherever you listen to podcasts and on YouTube. You can check out Ivy's amazing articles over on Substack. And if you follow us, you can get the articles delivered directly to your email. And as we have mentioned probably 1,000 times already, you can subscribe to get access. But you can get access to the archived articles that you cannot see anymore. And there are some really good ones in there.
Yeah. At this point, there's, I don't even know how many, at least like 20 or something. But every, you know, once a month or two has kind of passed, we go through and archive some of the older posts. And so when you do pay to subscribe, not only are you just, most importantly, you're just kind of helping to fund us. You know, podcasting isn't free. Hosting them isn't free. So you're helping to support in that regard. But then you also, you get access to a whole archive, a growing, ever-growing archive of things. If you're listening to this in the future, there's probably like 100 different posts in the archive. So,
and we will have thousands of episodes.
And we will be living in Scotland. So, and then if we have any Scottish listeners right now, they're like, you guys, it's not all it's cracked up to be. But actually, you're wrong. So,
you know what? The grass is greener on the other side.
We live.
You cannot tell us otherwise.
We live in America, and the bar for our standard of living is very low.
So low.
All right. Yes, thank you, everybody, for listening. Tayshia, amazing episode. Chef's kiss, 10 out of 10. There's about a 75% chance that I'm going to want to cover something Scotland related, but we'll see. Maybe I'll try to add some variety. A couple people on Substack, I was about to say, so many people on Substack are telling me to talk more about ghosts. It was two people. But maybe we'll do some more ghosts next. Well, I don't know.
I think you should also talk about ghosts more. So
okay. I haven't settled on my next topic yet, which I probably should because, you know, clock's always ticking. But oh well. Thank you for listening, and go check out the links below, and everybody have a wonderful time, and we hope to be your neighbors in Scotland when we all go live in Orkney and act like we are in the Neolithic era. And
yeah, I was gonna say,
we'll have indoor plumbing.
We'll just start that we'll start that community back up. It'll be peaceful and everyone will be chill and we'll be fishing and with our sheep and our buttos, and
most importantly with our buttos. I will be the designated butto craftsman. Okay, I'll do it fine. I'll just sit there whittling them all
twist
day.
Your arm.
Yeah, twist my arm. All right, bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
You know what? I'm going to do something else different here, and I kept a bunch of the bloopers that I usually just delete because Tayshia and I are friends and we're not always that serious. And sorry for another voice memo recording. I have a cat asleep on my lap on the couch while I'm editing this, so I physically cannot get up to get my mic. That's my excuse. But yeah, here's a handful of little bloopers that normally I delete, but this episode was just kind of fun anyways, so enjoy.
Okay, we're recording. Whew.
On the island of Orkney in Scotland, there is a village that gives us a glimpse into the life of the past. Nope. All right, try that again.
Good try. First 5 seconds of recording.
Right out of there. Just, nope.
Gotta get it out of the way. Get it out of the way, yeah. According to people. Oh my God. I'm not going to name names for the off chance they listen to this, but there is someone in my family who at one point asked my husband, she's not like sacrificing things in the basement, is she? And they weren't joking. They weren't joking either. Oh my gosh. Anyways, again, rambling right now. I'm off of my ADHD meds, and so I'm really raw dogging it. Tayshia, please, I'm going to sit here and shut up. I'm at the edge of my seat. There's ants in my pants.
Let's get them wiggled out.
Oh, God. Put that on some merch.
I don't know what that means. I was going to say, I'm like, I don't know what. Anyway. In Neolithic Scotland.
Oh boy.
Apparently that's really rough. All right. So. La la la, look at my notes.
Look at my notes.